Forget whatever plans you have this weekend because you're staying at home and playing on SpinQuest. And there's never been a better time to sign up than right now. New users get $30 coin packs for just $10. All the table games you love with hundreds of slot games and real cash prizes. That's at SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Preds win last night 8-3 as they score seven unanswered goals. Down 3-1 in the second period. And Philip Forsberg comes through with the big power play goal after going down 3-1. Almost immediately responds with a big goal to make it 3-2. And then the floodgates opened from there. So two big points last night. That's 4 points in two nights. They move up to ninth place in the standings in the Western Conference with two more big road games here before they come home to Bridgestone Arena against Ottawa and then Boston. Obviously, a couple of critical wins there for the Nashville Predators as they score 13 goals in their New York swing on the East Coast. So a really nice couple of nights for Predators hockey fans the last couple of nights. Derek Mason, Braden Gall here. Tweet us at 1025_MD. Your worst Christmas take. Your most unpopular Christmas take. And I have a couple here already before we get to the Titans. One of them was Christmas Eve is the better holiday than Christmas Day. I don't think that's unpopular. I agree. But that's
Christmas Eve is better than Christmas Day.
But I'm an adult, so I like Christmas Eve better. Whereas if this was like 6 year old Braden, 6 year old Braden would like Christmas morning better.
Can I say this? And
that was from Tim on.
Yeah, I enjoy and love what this holiday stands for. But after that, I hate everything else about it. I do. I love what it was intended for.
Oh, okay. I know where you're.
But I hate everything else about it because
it's just turned into a marketing.
Yeah, it's people are going in. People go in debt. People are stressed out. You know, kids are made fun of because they didn't get this gift or they didn't get the latest thing when they go to school. It's just become
status.
This huge marketing ploy. That when this time of year rolls around, I dread it. I really do.
Which
I love the idea. The concept, I love what it was intended for.
Yes, and that is why, of course, 102.5 The Game is in the season for giving. Because that is what this is really actually about, is the season of giving and taking care of people around you and your community. ESPN The Game Nashville is accepting donations of toys, winter clothing, or school supplies right here at the studio. 1824 Murfreesboro Pike in Nashville. That's Monday through Friday between 9 a.m. and 5 p.m. Donations will benefit our kids. OutKidsCenter.com. Check out the website. The Homeless and the Pencil Foundation. You can also donate tomorrow between 2 and 6 p.m. at Sutton Servants Convenience Store located at 129 Lubin Hill Road in Kingston Springs. Plus, while there, enter for your chance to win a Winter Classic jersey. For more information, visit thegamenashville.com or the Game Nashville app. And 102.5 The Game Season of Giving brought to you by Sutton Service Convenience Store. How about just like do something nice for somebody else randomly? Mm-hmm. How about that?
Yeah,
just do that. Just do that. Do one nice thing for somebody randomly that you've never met before and see how you feel about it and see how they react to you. I bet you'd be surprised how amazing it feels. All right, so the Tennessee Titans. My quick question here for you is about we'll get to the matchup with the Saints coming up next segment, but I wanted to the Pro Bowl voting. Brett Kern gets into the Pro Bowl, of course, right?
Congrats, Brent.
And he's
the best player on the team.
He might be the best player on the team. So congratulations to him. I'm just curious because I wanted to ask you this, and Joe Rexford was on the show, I think, a couple of weeks ago, and I asked him, I said, do you still care about it? And he said, not really. But his 12-year-old kid was checking everything, right? He was really into the Pro Bowl voting, and that's probably when I cared about the Pro Bowl, too, was when I was a teenager. As a player, does the Pro Bowl still matter to the players? Is it critical? Obviously, it's anything you can put on your resume is good.
Mm-hmm.
But like, do players really genuinely deeply care about being in the Pro Bowl or not? Or is it like, is it? I don't want to say jump the shark, or is it just lost its luster?
I think there are two groups. There's the groups that have been there, done that. So after they made, five or six, like Bruce Matthew, when he was playing. He had made, I think, like 10, 11, 12 straight. I don't know, somewhere around there. After number 10, it's like, okay, it's a great honor, but okay, I mean, I made it. Thank you, fans. Thank you, players, peers, and thank you, you know, coaches. But the one that everybody wants to make is all pro, because that is different. That's a different tier. That's not a popularity vote. Pro Bowl is a popularity vote. All pro is not a popularity vote. All pro is what do you do on the field? Because I believe it's voted on if God, I don't know why I forget this, but I think it's voted on by the coaches. And when other people, when other coaches around the league, and if it's not, if that's not the case, I stand corrected. But other coaches, if they look at you a certain way and they vote you all pro, that's more of a prestigious honor than Pro Bowl.
Yeah, there's no question about that.
Yeah. So I think guys, when they make all pro, they look at it different. Pro Bowl is all about fun. No one takes it serious. You get an extra check. Yeah, it looks good on the resume. But what looks even better on the resume, beside a Super Bowl, is
all pro.
All pro.
Yeah.
And after you've made it so many times, that's why guys, you see guys, you know, choosing not to go a lot. You know, I'm dealing with a minor ankle injury, so I'm not going
to
go.
And listen, obviously, congratulations to Derrick Henry as well, who I believe yesterday afternoon, got into the Pro Bowl as well, and that's a great honor.
Exactly.
For Derrick Henry. He should celebrate that. He's deserving and earned
it. And it's his first.
Just like Brett Kern. But, you know, I'm just curious how players view it, and you know, I still think that kids view it as a really important thing. Like, if you're still a sort of an innocent and pure, like, teenage kid who's like, man, I love the Pro Bowl. Like, I don't want to take that joy from you. It just hasn't, like, all-star games used to matter to me. Baseball, man, if you'd have told me, like, one of my favorite players was playing in the all-star game, I would, like, one of my birthday presents every year as a kid growing up was that I got to stay, like, the first birthday present I got every year for my birthday. My birthday's early July. The first thing I got as a birthday, which really isn't a present, it was just, you got to stay up. Hey, Braden, you get to stay up late to watch the All-Star game in Major League Baseball. It was like must-see television for me. Had to watch every pitch. Had to watch every inning. Was like my favorite thing, is one of my favorite things as a sports fan growing up as a kid. And I used to watch the Pro Bowl too. And I just haven't, you know, I still don't, like, I watch the All-Star game now, but I still watch it with less passion. I don't watch every pitch. Like, the All-Star games itself, in fact, the NHL is the one that's gained the most ground for me. I really enjoy the NASCAR All-Star race because it's like, here's $1 million, go wreck some cars, which is cool. Like, I like that because there's something on the line there, and people are, you know, they don't care if they bust up a bunch of equipment or whatever. I'm just curious if the players still view it that way, and it sounds like...
Yeah, I don't think, you know, I think they, when you're named a Pro Bowl participant.
Oh, you bet Derrick Henry's using it in the negotiation.
You use it because when you look at Derrick Henry, it's clear cut. He is a Pro Bowl. He will be an All Pro. He will be an All Pro first, second team. I think he will end up all first team All Pro along with Nick Chubb. I think it will be he and Nick Chubb as All Pros on the first team. If not first team, he will make second team.
Christian McCaffrey?
McCaffrey, yes. Yeah. So
maybe
it's between those three backs who will make the All-Pro first team. Yeah, All-Pro first team. But whoever doesn't make All-Pro first team will make the second team. I'm just looking at guys that have made it this year. Don't be surprised if A.J. Brown ends up being a Pro Bowl player.
Yeah.
Because I believe some of these guys may choose to not want to play.
Which devalues the selection to some degree.
And that's why guys look at it differently. Because I can recall it might have been 2 or 3 years ago where you had a record number of guys choosing not to play in a Pro Bowl. And then you had guys that
didn't Marcus make it?
Yeah, Marcus made it 1 year. You had guys that had mediocre numbers going to the Pro Bowl.
Yeah.
That takes away that thing that used to be the Pro Bowl that prestigious thing that used to be the Pro Bowl. Now it's become, okay, it's just another, it's just a bowl game. That's all it is. It's just a bowl game with a bunch of pros. It's no longer that prestigious thing because guys are choosing not to play in it.
Yeah. I just wanted to make sure I got a player's perspective on that because I have my own perspective as a fan. Which is that it just doesn't matter that much to me. I'm proud of Derrick. You know, if I'm Derrick Henry, hell yeah, I celebrate that. If I'm Brett Kern, heck yeah, I celebrate that. I just don't, as a fan, I don't watch the game anymore. Mm-hmm. Not many people are watching the game. The ratings are going down. It's just not, it doesn't have the same juice that it used to. But if players still care about it deeply, then I want to make sure we at least tell that story.
But if you ask players that have never been, or players that have been once or twice, I think they enjoy it more than the guys that have already been 3, 4, 5 times. Like Tom Brady couldn't care less with going to the Pro Bowl. Right. I mean, it's like, seriously, okay.
He's probably turned down more times than he's actually gone to the
Absolutely.
Pro Bowl.
Absolutely. So I guess it all depends on who you're asking. You're asking a guy that played, you know, 8 years ago. His last season was 8 years ago. So
how many Pro Bowls did you go to?
2, 3.
You don't know exactly? That's all I need to know.
2, 3.
If you don't know exactly, then that's all I needed to know.
Yeah, so.
If you didn't say, like, 2004, 2007, 2009, if you didn't say the exact years and know exactly, then it tells me all I need to know about how really important it was. It is still, it's like a contract extension for a coach. Uh-huh. It's still a reason to celebrate as a fan, like, celebrate Derrick Henry's accomplishment this year, celebrate, Brett Kern being one of the best in his position. It's still all reasons to celebrate. I just was curious what the player said. So, let's get into the Saints matchup, and what are we more concerned about when it comes to stopping Drew Brees? There are two factors, and I want to get your thoughts on that, Derek, when we come back right here, Morning Drive. God, it's good. NFL fans, don't miss Nashville's best NFL pregame show. A little New Orleans flavor there in the Atlanta-based hip-hop group. Start your morning off with the kickoff from 7 to 9:30 a.m., followed by the NFL pregame show featuring Jarrett Stillman, Floyd Reese, and Chris Sanders live from the George Jones downtown on 2nd Avenue this Sunday from 9:30 to 11:30 a.m. prior to the Titans taking on the New Orleans Saints. The NFL pregame show is brought to you by Wholesale Link, powered by RumbleOn.com, Kubota Tractors, Middle Tennessee Kubota Dealers, and Boom Bob's Craft Pizza and Tap House. Derek Mason, what are you more concerned with? How do you stop Drew Brees? Are you more concerned with the pass rush that didn't exist really against Deshaun Watson, or are you more concerned with the injuries in the secondary, both of which are huge factors here? Which one can be fixed? Which one is a bigger concern? Break it all down for me.
The secondary, to me, is the concern because that's not easy fixed. And if they don't get a Dory Jackson back, we see what can happen. We saw that last week versus the Houston Texans where, you know, they gave up 2 touchdowns to Steels. They couldn't cover Hopkins. DeAndre Hopkins.
Basically is what beat you in the
absolutely.
Fourth quarter.
DeAndre Hopkins, they couldn't stop him in the fourth quarter. They allow Will Fuller to get some big plays. He had some chunk plays on him, a few chunk plays on him as well. So to me, it's their inability to be, you know, to do things in the pass defense that they were able to do early in the season when they had Malcolm Butler and everyone was healthy and they were able to play a lot different on the back end. Now, because they have these kind of sort of they're mixing and matching and trying to put together the best back in unit they can, is going to leave them susceptible to the passing game. And it's bad that it's happened now where these are the 3 most important games of the season and they're going against, you know, 2 teams that thrive in the passing game. Now Houston ran the ball effectively too, which helped their passing game. But when you're going against New Orleans, you know, Drew Brees, Michael Thomas, In that unit, Kamara coming out the backfield, Ted Ginn with his speed, Jared Cook at tight end, who can present a mismatch as well. You need to be healthy in the secondary, and right now the Titans are not, and there's nothing they can do about it. Now they can play this bend but don't break defense, but eventually, like Houston did, eventually it's going to break. And it's just unfortunate they're going against, you know, arguably one of the best passing groups in the National Football League. We saw them earlier when they played against Kansas City. They won that game, but hell, Mahomes threw for a lot of yards.
Yes, he did.
You know, Watson was able to do some things in the passing game last week. That concerns me moving forward. And then they're not getting a pass rush. So that, more than anything, concerns me. Now, the Derrick Henry thing, we saw it was evident last week that, and Floyd talked about it yesterday too when I asked them the question about Derrick Henry. You saw certain runs that would have been probably 20, 30-yard gains, they were 10, 12-yard gains.
Yeah.
Why? Because he couldn't open up. You saw it.
Yeah.
It was like he couldn't. He didn't want to.
It's like he'd hit the clutch and try to go to fourth or fifth
gear.
Yeah,
try to go, but he couldn't.
The engine would just rev and just stay there in third
gear. Yeah, and that hurts their ability because now teams don't look at them as a home run hitting team. They don't honor. Like, Houston didn't respect the running game the way they would have had Derrick Henry been 100%.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. 159 targets for Michael Thomas. 159 targets.
He throws to nobody but Michael Thomas.
133 receptions. Now, Alvin Kamara's got 87 targets, so he's number two on the team. Jared Cook has 59 targets. So the next receiver on the list that gets targets is Ted Ginn. So the good news, now the problem with that is, so there's good and bad news with Ted Ginn. The good news is that they don't really go after their second receiver all that much. If you think about it, 14 games, 53 targets, do the math. You're talking about two or three targets, maybe a fourth target a game. So you don't have to be covering Ted Ginn all that much the way, you know, maybe Will Fuller or Kenny Stills can be used a little bit more often in the passing game from a percentage standpoint. But the other problem with Ted Ginn is that his game is a speed game.
Exactly, and he can kill you.
Kind of like Kenny Stills, if Logan Ryan's going to end up man up on Ted Ginn, they will go after you. And that's the one area Logan Ryan just, like, he is a great player. I think he's critically important to this team. But the one thing that, you know, you don't want to put him in a position to fail. Like, the job of the coach, and again, if you watch the art of coaching with Belichick and Saban, I thought it was fascinating to watch them talk about fitting their scheme and players and putting them into the right positions to succeed, knowing your players' limitations, and making sure you don't ever scheme to a point where a player is doing something that you don't want him to do, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you're asking player X to do something that player Y is supposed to do because they don't have those skill sets. Every player is different, right? And I think they were talking about the two corners on, like, the Browns team in, like, 1999, and they're like, or in the 80s, we had two great corners, but, like, they couldn't be different players. And so we're not going to ask one guy to do something that the other guy's really good at, so we want to make sure we put them in situations to succeed. Mm-hmm. And putting Logan Ryan man up on a burner in the slot,
that wasn't good.
Wasn't good. And that's,
but they
not,
had no other choice.
Right, and that's not going to work with Ted Ginn. Now, the good news is that Ted Ginn and the number three receiver on the team is, I guess in terms of targets, is Tre'Quan Smith with 18 targets. Mm-hmm. Like, 12 catches on the year, less than one per game. The guys that they go to are Kamara and Cook. Mm-hmm. Those are the secondary options. And those options I feel good about the Titans covering, with Kevin Byard, Jayon Brown, Amani Hooker. Like, I think they've got options to cover those guys. If you bring a second good receiver into this building right now, like the Texans have, the Titans can't answer that right now because of injuries. And I think LeSean Sims can go with Ted Ginn. You know, figure out a way to bracket Michael Thomas. He's only averaging 11 yards a catch.
Yeah.
But he's
going
to catch.
He's not a burner.
But he's going to catch. He's very similar to DeAndre Hopkins.
Exactly.
But he's going to catch 9 or 10 passes. Like, just be ready for it.
The thing with the Titans, it's hard to. Here's the reason why it's hard to cover Michael Thomas, because you don't know where he's going to line up. He's definitely not an outside guy, but he's big enough that he can play the outside because he can use his body. He's not a down the field threat, because he doesn't have the speed. But what they do is, and New Orleans they've been known for this ever since Sean Payton has gotten there. Just look at their top receivers. You go down and list of their top receivers, they're here. They're not burners. They're big guys that make tough catches inside the numbers. Sometimes
Marcus Colston.
Yeah, Colston.
Yeah.
Colston and Michael Thomas are one and the same guy. They are. They are truly both of them are truly the same guy. Michael Thomas is just younger. When he's doing it now at a younger age than what Colston did it.
Right. Maybe a little bit more athletic.
Yeah, it might be. But what they do so well is they put those guys in positions to make plays. Yeah. Michael Thomas moves all around.
Well, and Breeze gets the ball out.
And Breeze gets the ball to him very quickly. Yeah. It's hard to cover a guy that consistently moves. It's easy to cover Ted Ginn because you know where he's going to be. It's easy, a little bit easier to cover Will Fuller because you know he's going to be necessary. He's going to be the outside guy. It's hard to cover DeAndre Hopkins because he can line up inside, outside. He's going to motion. He's going to be in bunch splits, tight splits. That's what they do to Michael Thomas. Bunch tight splits. He's going to be an inside. Yeah. He's going to be outside. You never know exactly where he's going to be. And then they use everybody else to sort of run them off and let him come underneath. And he's not going to drop anything.
Ever.
That's the part about it. So they got to figure out a way to bracket coverage him. The one thing about Bill Belichick and Nick Saban, this is what they're going to do. You, Brayden Thomas, you, Brayden Gall, are not going to beat me. Everybody else, if you're going to beat me with the guy outside or somebody else, then fine. But you, Brayden Gall, you're not going to beat me. That's one thing that those coaches have been able to do. That's what Dean Pease, he has to do. He has to say, Ted Ginn, Jared Cook, that other receiver, y'all can beat me. But him, Michael Thomas, you're not going to beat me. You're not going to end up with 13 catches for 130 yards and two touchdowns. And you're not going to do it.
And Dean Pease and that defense did a great job with DeAndre Hopkins.
For the most part.
Through three quarters. And then the fourth quarter happened, and the most important drives of the game happened, and DeAndre Hopkins made three big plays. Deshaun Watson's special, and he made the plays.
I'm playing everybody else man-to-man. But I'm doubling, bracketing Thomas. I'm not letting him be the deciding factor in this game.
What happens if Ted Ginn does exactly what Kenny Stills did last
week?
You live with it.
Because what you're going to do is put Logan Ryan on him.
Yep.
And you just hope, hey, Logan, you take him. We're paying you $8, $9 million a year. You take him.
All right. This is going to be fascinating. The other side of this conversation was the pass rush.
Yeah. We can get to that.
You better get to the pass rush. Today is National Signing Day. It's early, obviously, the early national signing period. So we'll talk with Wes Rucker from Go Vols 24/7 Sports, look at their class. Jeremy Pruitt has a top 20 class right now in the recruiting rankings. We'll take a look at, are there any big names on the table left for Tennessee? Can they make a move today? And what are the biggest stories on National Signing Day? We'll get to all of that when we come back right here on Morning Drive. Today is National Signing Day, although technically it's a three-day period. Morning Drive, Derek Mason, Brayden Gall here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. And it's turned out, as the statistics have gone over the course of the years, now the third year entering the early signing period for college football, I think 69, 70% of the prospects signed in year one. Upwards of 77% of the prospects signed last year. We expect that number to be in the 80s. Wes Rucker from Go Vols 24/7 joining us here on the program to talk a little Tennessee recruiting, and we'll get to basketball in a second. Wes, do you expect the majority of the Tennessee signing class? I know there was some flips and some guys that flipped on Tennessee, both good and bad, over the weekend. Do we expect most everybody to sign today?
I think so. You know, I think there's a couple guys who are probably holding out a little bit, and I think there's one of Tennessee's kind of biggest targets, Chattanooga defensive lineman Jay Hardy, who's currently committed to Auburn and kind of shocked everybody because everybody thought that he would kind of follow his brother, former Tennessee fullback Kevin Cooper, and sign with Tennessee, but he chose Auburn. But now he's not going to sign. He's for sure not going to sign until February, so Tennessee's going to get another month to recruit him. So they're definitely going to keep at least one spot open for him, and I would suspect they'll leave a few spots open.
Now, looking at the National Signing Day, looking at the National Signing Day, this is the first period. Obviously, there's another one going on pretty soon here. Where do you think has Coach Pruitt done a good enough job at putting his team, considering what they did toward the end of the season past season? Do you think that has helped him in recruiting this recruiting period?
I think it has a little bit. You know, although what's interesting about Pruitt is, and this staff really, there are three former National Recruiters of the Year on this staff, including the one, the reigning National Recruiter of the Year. I think a lot of people are kind of wondering why this class is kind of ranked somewhere closer to 20 maybe than it is like the top 10. And I think they're not done yet. I think they still got work to do there. But I think they went and got a couple of big linemen in this class, guys who aren't highly rated guys. I think they actually feel pretty good about this class. Now, I know they're going to go out there when they do their press conference today. I think I'll be on the road to Cincinnati at that point for basketball. But they're going to have their press conference at some point today, and they're going to say what everybody else says, right? Oh, this was the greatest class. You know, we got everything we wanted, blah, 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 blah. I think Tennessee actually will sort of mean that to some extent. I think that they got a lot of what they wanted in this class. Now, they didn't get everybody. But I think they feel pretty good about this group and think some of these guys have a chance to kind of prove how big, in their opinion, they should have been rated.
Well, and the big defensive lineman out of Memphis, Demaryius Thomas, good to get a guy at that position. Desperately needed bodies at that position. Wes Rucker joining us here. What is the upside as far as the ranking goes here? I mean, they're ranked 20th right now with 24/7 Sports. There certainly is some upward mobility, but that is 8th in the SEC, behind teams in the East like South Carolina. So what is the upside? How many names are on the board? And we saw Pruitt close really well last year with Eric Gray, and you know, Darnell Wright was sort of a you know, we sort of all saw that one coming. Henry Toto is a name he got late in the process. Do we expect the same kind of fireworks? Is there still some upside left on the board?
Oh, sure. Tennessee, I think, still is very much in play with Darnell Washington, who is, I think, the top 10, the number 10 rated player in the class, according to the composite. This is a kid who is 6'7" and like 270 pounds and is a tight end. He's just absolutely enormous. I mean, you say these kinds of things all the time about different prospects, but this kid really looks like he's about 31 years old. You know, he just kind of, he's a big, strong man out there, you know, basically looking like an offensive lineman, but he runs like a tight end. It's kind of crazy. And I think a lot of people are talking about Bama and Georgia there, but that kid's from Las Vegas, and he's taken 6 trips to Tennessee. 6. And only one of those, obviously, was one that Tennessee could pay for. So the other 5, he did on his own dime, 5 times. Now, that's a lot. That's a lot of times to make that trip. It's about, what, 2,800 miles, 2,500 miles, something like that. Tennessee's definitely in play there. And I think he's not announcing. I think he might be signing somewhere in the next couple of days, but I don't think he's going to announce anything until the Under Armour game, All-America game there in a few weeks. So I think he's the big one out there. But really, the thing is, when you look at Tennessee's class and where it's ranked, and you look at the classes above Tennessee, all those classes have at least 3, 4, or 5 more guys. So this class is going to go up in rankings almost certainly as it adds a couple guys. And I think it'll add a couple guys today at some point throughout the day. I think there's a couple that they're in the mix for, and I think there's a couple more that they could just kind of flip. So I think they're in the mix with a couple of guys. I'm not predicting they're going to get all of them, but I think they're going to get some of them. I think that's going to help them a little bit in the rankings.
Now, I'm not going to talk much about the renewed rivalry or hopes of a renewed rivalry with Memphis, but what I do want to ask you is about Turner and Bowden, them going 3 for 21. Did Penny Hardaway, the way he played defense, give you a template on how to sort of neutralize what UT does in the backcourt? Because they're going to win and they're going to lose based upon, you know, that backcourt that they have. It's a very good backcourt, but they didn't play that way against Memphis.
Yeah, I think that, you know, I've gone back and watched part of that game just to make sure, because when I watched the game, you know, I think Memphis deserves some credit, but I also think Tennessee just missed some shots it usually makes. And, you know, for Tennessee, it's one thing to go have a bad game. It's another thing to shoot 25% from the field for a game. You know, this is a team that's been kind of in the top 30 for a lot of the year in terms of offensive efficiency. That was a terrible game. You know, against Florida State, Tennessee shot fine. It was just turnovers. Tennessee had never had a game like that at any point during the year when they just were absolutely that bad shooting the ball. So unless that happens a couple more times, I think it's safe to say that was kind of an odd thing. But, you know, I'll say this too. I've covered Tennessee-Memphis basketball games for a couple decades now, and they usually kind of look like hand-to-hand combat. They don't usually look like basketball. You know, they kind of devolve into, like, street fights when those guys go out there and play each other. They just kind of bang on each other. no blood, no foul. It just gets physical and intense. The crowds are loud. I think Tennessee just kind of put some pressure on themselves. I think the crowd was sighing and kind of getting a little bit nervous every time they missed a shot, and it just kind of spiraled the wrong way for them. They just kind of never figured it out. But I do think, to your point about what you're mentioning about sort of the plan there, Florida State is the longest team in college basketball in terms of wingspan, average wingspan. And they got a lot of athletes, and they throw a lot of bodies at you, and they put a lot of pressure on the ball. And so Memphis does some of those same things. I just don't think Memphis did maybe quite as good a job as Florida State did there. But they both had some success there, and I think that's what people are going to do at Tennessee. They're going to throw bodies at them. They're going to try to kind of wear them down, and they're going to hope that the guards don't shoot well. Because you're right, if the guards don't shoot well, they're going to have a hard time beating people. But if those guards do shoot well, though, they can beat anybody. So that's where the key to the game lies.
Wes Rucker joining us here, GoVols 24/7. And the question I have about the future of the rivalry, Wes, is did Penny do enough in the post game? Was he contrite enough? Did he apologize enough? You know, whatever you want to call it, to sort of bring Tennessee fans back to the table. So how did the fans react to his comments after the game? Sort of, you know, falling on the sword a little bit, saying, listen, I made a mistake. That wasn't me. That won't happen again. I talked to Rick Barnes about it. And then who do you think controls the future of this series? Is it in Rick Barnes in Tennessee's court right now?
Yes, it is. I think it's pretty clear that Memphis wants to keep playing, and I think it's pretty clear that Tennessee still has very little interest in doing so. I don't know that Tennessee's going to come out and say it, but I think that people at Tennessee thought Penny Hardaway crossed the line last season. And I don't know that they plan on renewing that series, at least for a while. And I think that's a shame, because I think both of these programs kind of owe it to the state to kind of give the state of Tennessee basketball that spectacle every year, because Tennessee puts so many teams in the tournament every year. Tennessee is so criminally underrated nationally, you know, as a basketball state with the number of programs, with the high majors, mid majors, low majors in the tournament. But right now, I do think the ball is in Tennessee's court, because they're going to play next season in Nashville. They're not going to change that. They've already got that contractually agreed to. But that stuff last year really kind of rubbed Tennessee the wrong way. And I think it was good for Hardaway to come out and say the things he said, because most of the thing he said last year, just there was no basis in fact for any of it. I mean, the accusations he made were just, according to everything I'd seen, completely false. So it was good to see him admit that, and I think that was a good first step. And if they keep having conversations, they might be able to get back to the table and discuss this. But as of now, and I'm on record saying I don't like that Tennessee's doing this, but as of right now, I still think Tennessee's planning on not extending that contract.
Yeah, do the right thing, Tennessee. That's a tentpole event that like you said, criminally underrated as a basketball state. We're having a moment right now as a state. It's an important game people can look forward to in December. It's just great all around, and it's unfortunate that you know, some silly comments that are baseless maybe are going to be the undoing of this. Which again, I thought Penny did enough to me as an alumni to say, you know what, he's apologized. Let's move forward and let's play this game, because it's best for what everybody else wants in the state. So, Wes Rucker.
Yeah, I think so, too. I think that Rick Barnes was not blameless in that thing last year. He kind of egged it on a little bit with his comments on his coach's show. Don't get me wrong, it was mostly Penny, but Rick did some of that, too. But it's just, you know, I said it last week in a column. I don't care who pushed you on the playground. I don't care who started the fight. Just get over it and be adults about this.
Yep, absolutely. Wes Rucker, enjoy today, man. Safe travels. And you got Cruton, you got basketball. Enjoy it all, my man.
Yeah, no problem. Got a lot of stuff going on today, fellas.
There you go. Wes Rucker, a lot of positives there left for Tennessee on the recruiting board. And then, of course, it's clearly Tennessee's decision on whether or not to renew this Memphis-Tennessee basketball rivalry. We'll discuss all of that when we come back right here on Morning Drive.
Let me tell you, man, I know you're out there listening, because you're in your cars or you're sitting at your computer and you're listening to us, 102.5 The Game, The Morning Drive. And I've been telling you this for over a year now by my friends over at Cool Springs MD. Over the years, more men have started to seek help for hormone deficiencies and imbalances. Dr. Jeffrey Lodge, his wife Daphne, along with that beautiful, wonderful, and experienced staff, give men the treatment required to improve their quality of life. Cool Springs MD services have already helped many men of the Brentwood, Nashville, Franklin, which I'm in, and the surrounding areas in Tennessee with improving their immune systems, energy level, cognitive functions, and more. They are there to connect you with the medical care you require to have a healthy and enriched life. And men, we need it bad. And what better way to achieve that lifestyle, man, than going to see the good folks at Cool Springs MD. So what are you waiting on? It's easy. Do it today, not tomorrow. Don't wait until Christmas. Make it an early Christmas present for yourself. Or wives, make it an early Christmas present for your husband. And make an appointment for him. Because here's the number. An appointment, it takes nothing. All it takes for you is to pick up that telephone, dial these digits. I'm about to give them to you. Or visit the website. And I'm going to give you that too. Here's the number. 615-486-3458. 615-486-3458. Or visit the website, CoolSpringsMD.com.
You're listening to Morning Drive live from the Wholesaling Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com. At 1025 underscore MD, the Twitter account. Tweet us your most unpopular Christmas take. Is that what we're going to call it? The most unpopular Christmas take.
Yep.
Derek Mason, Braden Gall, Munson here on Morning Drive. Do either of you two have an unpopular Christmas take you'd like to throw out there right now? Are you still waiting to waiting to divulge that information until a little bit later on?
Yeah, I'm still waiting.
Other than the whole, I just hate what Christmas, what it has become.
I don't think that's unpopular.
Yeah,
though.
You're right. But
like, if you say that about Valentine's Day,
yeah,
I think everyone's like, oh yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
Like Valentine's Day is just a marketer's holiday. Don't get me wrong.
The worst
like,
holiday.
Like
of all the holidays.
Like I don't need a day to. My wife and I.
Valentine's Day is probably the worst holiday. Yeah.
My wife and I've always agreed. Like we just don't need a day to make sure we tell each other that like we love each other.
But we have
or
Sweeties,
do nice things for each other.
We
like,
have Sweeties.
We do that
day
all the time
up north. Sweeties Day.
I made tacos for my wife last night.
That's just hot. That's an extension of Valentine's.
Sweeties Day?
Yeah, they have Valentine's Day and then Sweeties Day.
That sounds awful.
I know, it is. It's just another marketing tool.
Do you grow out of Sweeties Day? Is that like a teenage thing?
I hope, yeah. I mean,
It sounds like a it sounds like when, you know when Marquise proposed with his promise ring to his high school girlfriend? I think he did it on Sweeties Day.
Yeah,
nah, man, it was a random Wednesday.
There's a high possibility he did it on Sweeties Day.
It was on
Day.
Sweeties Day. All right.
But I'm going to give you mine, but I'm going to wait until... probably the 8 o'clock hour.
We might have to give earmuffs too.
Yeah, we might
to some folks.
I'll think of something before stick to sports for sure. I gotta.
I'm gonna give mine the 8 o'clock
hour.
Well, so be listening.
Don't tell everybody that you haven't thought of it. Just say no. I'm saving it.
Be listening in the 8 o'clock hour.
All right, I'm gonna give it to you.
It's big.
And
too.
We'll talk with Sean Henry and get his thoughts on his most unpopular Christmas take as well. We'll do that coming up in the final, in the 8 o'clock hour.
Yep.
That is two really quick thoughts off of Wes Rucker there.
Uh-huh.
Number one, there is still plenty on the board for Tennessee. So just because you're sitting at number 20 in the recruiting rankings does not mean it's going to finish at that point. I think there's a lot of stuff that's going to happen today and over the next couple of days. And I think there's some big names left on the board for Tennessee that they can go get. You know, Wes Rucker mentioned all of them. Mm-hmm. I don't think you need to be top 10 to continue the momentum. I think you need to add a couple of dudes before signing day in February when the whole thing is officially over. If you can add a couple of guys and you finish, you know, between 14 and 17, 14 and 18, you're still one of the better classes in America. And that, to me, that what that does is it continues the momentum of good recruiting class last year. Clearly the freshmen are good in that class. They've been huge contributors all season long. And the rebound at the end of the year for Tennessee as they won games down the stretch. The next step of that continuation is finish with like a top 15-ish type of recruiting class. And I think that they're clearly in a position to do that. So I think that's a huge positive. The other thing, and this is what we talked about yesterday, I think Penny Hardaway, and I will only speak personally as my own as an alumni, to me, Penny Hardaway said enough and did enough after the game, saying he was wrong with how he handled last year, saying it was cringeworthy, it was a bad look, and it will never happen again. That is enough for me as an alumni to say, who cares? Bury the hatchet. Let's get this game on the books. And if Tennessee doesn't do it, it's all
on them.
It's all on them. It's all we thought this ball was all going to be in Tennessee's court, and it is. According to Rick Barnes in Tennessee, they don't want to play the series. At least that's the vibe they're sending out right now.
do what's best for the state of Tennessee and play that game every December.
I don't understand because this is a situation where and Wes said it, and we said this yesterday, and he's echoed it today. If you look at the series, it's been a rugged series.
That's fun.
It's been close.
It's awesome.
Relatively close when you look at games. Even last year, when UT was one of the top-ranked teams in the country, that was still a dogfight between those two teams. You're talking about a team that was ranked, I think, 2 at the time, somewhere around there. And Memphis wasn't even ranked.
Yeah.
And they went
still
head.
A dog
yeah,
fight.
It was a dogfight. Why wouldn't you want that? The only reason I can see that Tennessee don't want to travel down that road is what you talked about yesterday. What is the benefit? If we lose, then we get embarrassed. If we win, everybody say, well, we should beat them.
Although I don't know if that's the case.
You know, yeah, it's right.
Every year that might not be the case
because
Penny's recruiting like crazy.
Because we're in the SEC and we're in a Power 5 conference and you're not.
But this is about ego. This is entirely about ego. If Rick Barnes in Tennessee decides not to play this game, it's about ego. It's about your feelings being hurt.
I think I'm telling you, I would love to see that rivalry get ramped up because
you
have Rick Barnes that is continuing to build a program.
I know.
Penny Hardaway is building a program in Memphis. If you're talking potentially, well, you had 2 ranked teams this year, possibly 2 ranked teams next year, and then a year after that. Who doesn't want that?
They're not going anywhere.
Yes.
Like Rick Barnes, let's play it out long term. Like Rick Barnes could retire in the next, let's say, 5 to 8 years, let's say. Mm-hmm. He's been around a long time. He's coached a lot of games. It wouldn't be shocking if Rick Barnes stepped down in 4 or 5 years. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's that crazy. I do think, and then Casey Alexander can take the job. I do think that,
which would be a great move.
Yeah, and I do think Penny. Obviously, I don't know what Penny's aspirations are. Mm-hmm. If he wants to be in the NBA, obviously you can't do that at Memphis. Although I guess in theory you could go across town.
Yeah.
It depends on what he dreams of. Does he love Memphis? And in his case, it was Memphis State, right?
Uh-huh.
Does he love Memphis basketball, University of Memphis basketball, so much that he doesn't have eyes for another job? That may be a destination job for him. And if he wants to stay there for the rest of his career, they'll let him. And as long as he's producing, right? So there's, in theory, you could have both these guys at these two jobs for the next, God knows what, 5, 6, 7, 8, 10 years.
Penny seems like a lifer.
He could be. And if that's the case, then you've got meat on the bone for these two teams. Mm-hmm. Like there's juice there. There's history. And you could do this where you go Memphis 1 year, Knoxville the next year, and Nashville the third year. And you just rotate it every 3 years. And it would be spectacular. As long as, especially if those two coaches stay there, it would be great. And right now, it's about ego. It's about Rick Barnes in Tennessee saying, I don't want to. Why would we do that? You guys said some mean stuff about us last year. And Penny was out of line last year. But guess what? He apologized, and he said he was wrong, and he said it'll never happen again. I'll take him at his word, and let's say play some basketball, boys.
He can, to me, he just seems like, how all of this kind of came to be, him moving back to Memphis, him never losing, never losing touch with the city of Memphis, even when he was in the NBA. Memphis was always there. Then he goes back and he takes over for one of his best friends that is dealing with a illness that is going to ultimately take his life. Then he takes over that team. Then all of a sudden he gets the job that I think many believe he was coveting, the University of Memphis. To me, he can become what Tom Izzo is now. Tom was under Judd Heathcote for a very long time and then finally ended up getting a job. Izzo flirted with going to the NBA and they wanted him. But ultimately, his heart is in East Lansing, and you can't see him being anywhere else. Mike Krzyzewski, you can't see him being anywhere else. That's how I kind of look at Penny.
But it puts him in a unique position because he can still coach for an NBA championship in his city. So what matters about this is how much do you love your university versus do you want to win an NBA championship?
If he continues to recruit, they continue to win, they continue to upgrade the facilities.
Right.
Then it's like, okay.
Well, it's the old college football thing. Like when you put your head on the pillow at night and you go and you fall asleep, do you dream of cutting down the nets to one shining moment with your university? Mm-hmm. Or do you dream about holding that golden trophy? Like if you're
No, you're right.
Like Chip Kelly, right? Chip Kelly, we've always talked about with Chip Kelly in the NFL. Like Chip Kelly always, even at Oregon and through college, we knew Chip Kelly wanted to win a Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. Like when he put his head down on the pillow at night and he had dreams about winning, he didn't dream about winning the Pac-12 title or the conference, or, you know, college football playoff. He dreamed about the Lombardi Trophy. Mm-hmm. And you can't win that in college. So if Penny's dream is to be the greatest at the NBA level, mm-hmm. then he's got a perfect spot for that with Memphis because the Grizzlies are there. Mm-hmm. If he dreams about one shining moment and cutting down the nets and Final Fours, and that's what he about taking Memphis to that place that John Calipari almost got them to mm-hmm. until Derrick Rose missed a few free throws.
it would have got taken away anyway.
Well, right, the banner came down eventually. But listen, Calipari hangs banners in Velcro, okay? Yeah. Settle down out there. But little fun there. We're just having fun with you, Kentucky fans. Chill out, Kentucky fans. I just think it depends on what Penny dreams about, and if Penny dreams about winning Final Fours, then he'll stay at Memphis, and he could be there forever, and that's a good thing for the city of Memphis. It's a good thing for the state of basketball in Tennessee, and it's an even better thing if they played Tennessee. Mm-hmm. So Tennessee and Rick Barnes, get your head out of you-know-what and get the schedule set, and let's play this game every December. Preds get a huge win last night. Really critical things you need to know about that big victory on the road, and some interesting comments from one of the team leaders that was not expected. We'll get to all of that when we return. Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Hey guys, Lady Luck here. Are you going on any road trips this summer? I know I'm going to be going on a bunch of road trips, and being that I'm going to be passenger princess, I love playing on SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest has all of my favorite slot games, live blackjack, live craps. Head on over to SpinQuest right now and get yourself a $30 coin pack for just $10.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.